Well, good morning. I think we'll go ahead and get started. I wasn't able to do a press conference last week because I was in China on a trade mission, so I thought I'd just give a really quick update on that. I was really, really honored to lead a very historical trade mission for Iowa. It was the first time that we had an all-agricultural delegation go to China, and it was really, I think, very powerful to see a united ag industry really made a strong voice for opportunities that exist not only for our farmers but for the market in China. So it was a great trade mission. Ambassador Branstad hosted us at the residence. We also got to meet with him at the embassy, and he participated in the Iowa reception that we held with our industry partners, as well as companies that are already located over there, and then, of course, our delegation. So it was a great trip, looking forward to expanding markets and the opportunities that we believe see going forward. Of course, we highlighted China opening the market to beef. My husband, Kevin, participated in the trip and did a trade promo at Walmart, showcasing beef and how wonderful it is and the opportunity to open the market. So it was a great trip, and I was very proud to have the opportunity to lead that. So yesterday, I also had the opportunity to testify before the EPA on the importance of having a robust renewable fuel standard, or the RFS. Long been a passionate supporter of the biofuels industry, and certainly understand how vital renewable fuels are to the Iowa farmers as well as our state's economy. Without question, and I was proud to demonstrate to highlight this, our farmers have demonstrated that they have the capacity to not only feed but to fuel the world, and the RFS is critical in our continuing ability to do that. And the renewable fuel industry's growth is critical for that also. So I just want to share some statistics that show the significant impact of the RFS in Iowa. Iowa has more than 43,000 jobs that are tied to the renewable fuel industry. That generates about $2.3 billion of income for Iowans. 3.5% or $4.6 billion is contributed to the GDP. It's tied directly to renewable fuels. Iowans saved more than $314 million in 2015 using ethanol-blended fuels. We saw our E15 sales in Iowa grow last year by 193%, and nearly 90% of gasoline sold last year was blended with ethanol. Iowa has 42 ethanol facilities in operation, one under construction. We have 4 next-generation cellulosic plant facilities. And I'm proud to say that our state accounts for 27% of the total U.S. ethanol production. So certainly emphasized those facts through my testimony. I also took the opportunity to commend the administration for its commitment to keeping the RFS at the level that was set by Congress, that and was grateful for that, grateful for the EPA in bringing predictability and stability to the renewable fuel industry. That had not been happening with the previous administration, and we had a direct impact because they didn't set the levels and they didn't do it in a timely manner, and that really shut off new investment into next generation renewable fuels. Also pleased that the number set for corn ethanol was again with the what the congressional intent was at 15 billion gallons. However, it was a mixed bag. We also were able to reiterate our disappointment to see that the EPA cut the advanced biofuels category from 4.28 billion gallons required to 4.24 billion gallons. The EPA's 2018 projection for cellulosic ethanol, it was based on looking backwards at 2016, and I think projection by definition is what's going to happen in the future, not what's happened in the past. The near-term future for cellulosic is brighter than we believe the proposed obligations, so we urge the EPA to implement required future projections necessarily to properly set the 2018 cellulosic ethanol level in the final rule. I also encourage the EPA to increase the 2019 biodiesel levels from 2.1 billion to 2.75 billion gallons. In Iowa, we account for 16% of the total U.S. biodiesel production, and in 2016, the United States consumed 2.8 billion gallons of biodiesel, so we can definitely exceed the volume by 2019. In fact, each time the EPA has raised the biodiesel volumes, the industry has risen to the challenge. And really, that's what the RFS does. It's a market-forcing policy, and it's bold, and the EPA's volume requirements should reflect that. From our farm fields to our main streets, Iowans understand the importance of maintaining a strong RFS. And without, I think, our continued diligence on this front, farmers and individuals involved in agriculture production and the biofuels industry could take a direct hit on, well, their incomes would be directly impacted if we didn't get the volumes that we're requesting. Consumers prefer to choose lower-cost biofuels. They've demonstrated that over and over. And these are real people who live in real communities, and they are counting on us to keep rural America strong, and we believe that a strong and robust RFS does that. So we're not going to let up. We're not going to stop advocating for the importance of it. So at this time, I would like to turn it over to Lieutenant Governor Gregg.
Thank you, Governor, and good morning. Of course, we know Iowa has long been a national leader in agriculture. We're number one in corn and soybean production. We're number one in ethanol and biodiesel production. And we're number one in cellulosic ethanol production. So we know better than anyone what a major role the renewable fuel standard plays in sustaining our ability to continue as an agricultural leader by giving farmers another market for their commodities. That's why I echo Governor Reynolds' plea to the Environmental Protection Agency for a strong RFS, particularly higher levels in the advanced biofuels category. Right now in Iowa, there are 11 biodiesel refineries in production, and on top of that, we currently have 4 next-generation cellulosic facilities. So Iowans are leading the way in the renewable energy space, and we have no plans of slowing down. This time, I'd like to turn it over to Monty Shaw, the Executive Director of the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association, for more.
Oh, thank you to the Governor and Lieutenant Governor for having us here today. And I really do want to start by thanking the Governor for taking time to go to Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is a little dysfunctional these days and has been for several years, but rules like this are going to move forward. And I cannot stress the importance of having a governor take time out of their busy schedule, just back from China, probably hardly got to, you know, find your own pillow, and then back on an airplane to D.C. And you were joined by Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts. And for those folks to go out there and to let the EPA leadership and the White House know this is something we're watching, this is something that's important to us, has a lot of impact. The other way we can have impact is to have Iowans, individual Iowans, comment on this. And I know through our website and others, there's going to be lots of opportunities for Iowans to weigh in. And so I'll talk a little bit on the ethanol side and then turn over for biodiesel. But I testified out there yesterday as well, right after the governor, and she kind of hit everything. So there wasn't a whole lot left for me to say. I just said, yeah, what she said was good. But 15 billion gallons, we are appreciative that they've done that, but we cannot take that for granted. The oil industry is launched a major effort on comments to get people to urge the EPA to reduce that number. So while that was good news in the proposal, you know, we can't just say, okay, that's a done deal. We have to continue to fight on it. And then we were disappointed with the cellulosic number. You know, that's been an industry that has taken longer to get off the ground than we had hoped. And so, you know, there had to be some adjustments there. But the proposal out there cut it 25% from the previous year. And what they're missing with, as the governor noted, this look back system that they use this year to basically say, well, whatever you did in the past is what will set the number in the future. That just doesn't work. That doesn't create new growth. That just memorializes the past. That's not what the RFS was about. And a new technology is kind of sweeping our industry, which you guys might not know of, but even our traditional ethanol plants are getting into the cellulosic game. So they, you know, we take the corn and there's starch in it and we turn it into ethanol. And then the rest went out as livestock feed. There's new technology entering the marketplace very quickly that allows these corn ethanol plants to convert corn fiber out of the kernel, not just the starch, but some of the fiber into ethanol as well. It's all ethanol at the end of the day, but it comes from the different parts of the kernel. Well, that fiber is actually considered cellulosic ethanol. We expect by the end of this year to have at least a dozen or more plants producing cellulosic ethanol, and maybe as much in 2018 as 20 to 25 million gallons if they can get the numbers right and create the market demand. So when the EPA in this proposal looked back, they missed all of that. none of those 12 plants were doing well. One of them, but so they got one out of 12 plants looking back last year and not seeing what's going to happen. That's not the forward-looking policy it's supposed to be. We also had a recent court case that directed them to stick to the letter of the law, and there's a lot in the proposal that asks questions about kind of tangential. Well, should we take this into consideration, or should we take that into consideration? And the circuit court has said, no, follow the law. That's a pretty easy concept for us and I would understand, but sometimes the swamp logic out in D.C. is a little bit different. So that was another message we made. But with that, I'll turn it over to Grant Kimberly, who's the executive director of the Iowa Biodiesel Board.
Thank you, Governor and Lieutenant Governor, for having us today. And we just, again, I want to reiterate what Monty said. We are so grateful for the governor taking time out of her busy schedule to fly to D.C. and to advocate for the importance of continuing to increase the renewable fuel standard. Yesterday, I also had the chance to testify along with several members from the National and the Iowa Biodiesel Board and the American Soybean Association industry. And we also asked EPA regarding the biodiesel portion of the RFS to continue to move that forward and to increase the volume targets. As the governor talked about, we've been utilizing well over 2.8 billion gallons of biodiesel this past year. And the volume targets was set for 2019. Is only set for 2.1 billion gallons. So we're asking EPA to increase that volume target for biodiesel to 2.75 billion gallons. Also, we mentioned the advanced biofuel category. That's also very important because biodiesel is also considered an advanced biofuel. It's the only really commercially available advanced biofuel that's domestically produced in the United States. So that we can also participate in that volume category as well. So we're asking for that volume to continue to increase. This past year, the Iowa biodiesel industry produced approximately 305 million gallons of biodiesel in the state of Iowa. We are the nation's number one biodiesel producer, but we have capacity in our state to produce well over 400 million gallons of biodiesel. So we're still running well below our capacity. So, and nationally, the story is much the same. It's even at a lower percentage. So there's plenty of room to continue to increase our volume capacities for biodiesel. Biodiesel burns cleaner. It makes engines more efficient. It's something that we utilize our agriculture products here, helps our economy. Just in Iowa alone, the direct impact would be approximately 63 cents a bushel to the price of soybeans because we can also use soybean oil and animal fats for biodiesel. It also lowers the value of soybean meal because we're producing more for the oil now, so we have more meal, more protein available, so it lowers feed and food costs as well. So we have a great story to tell. We're helping improve energy, the domestic energy supply. We're helping the economy. We're helping our Iowa agriculture economy. So we're here to help meet that demand. We're helping to increase that. We're advocating that with the EPA, and we're hoping that they can continue to move forward. And so, again, we need public comments that go into the EPA. We have this comment period, a chance to maybe improve these volume targets and move it forward because it's good for the economy, for the Iowa economy. It's good for the U.S. economy. So with that, I'll turn it back to the governor and Lieutenant Governor. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate that. We'd open it up for comments on this topic.
The last 3 years, the renewable fuel standard has kind of rolled back, and the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Washington recently ruled on the definition of inadequate domestic supply. And in that, they said that ethanol essentially had a waiver of 2.24 billion gallons of ethanol over the last 3 years. When you guys were in Washington, did you talk at all about making good on that ethanol that wasn't used?
Yeah.
You know, that is something our industry is looking at. Essentially, the circuit court ruled that under the Obama EPA, they illegally applied a so-called waiver authority that they didn't have to justify reducing the congressionally mandated schedule for corn ethanol. And so for a couple of years, we had a lower number than we should have. And so the question is, the court has now ruled you should not have done that. Do not do that. The question is, do we then push the EPA to go back and say, hey, make good, make the obligated parties retire some more RINs or something? I don't know if our industry is going to push for that. I don't know either way we're having those discussions. Personally, I think the important thing is moving forward because it said supply is supply. You know, supply is not demand, and supply is domestic and imports. And if you look at the current proposal that is still out there, there's all kinds of talk of, you know, so-called market constraints, so-called limits on market demand. Should we be taking into consideration whether some of this renewable fuel is imported as if somehow, I want all the biodiesel to be from the U.S., and we certainly could do that. But if a little bit came in from Argentina, is that somehow bad? considering if we don't use the biodiesel, it'll mean more oil from the Middle East. So I think we'd rather, you know, my personal preference would be to make sure that this new directive from the court to follow the law is applied going forward. If there's some way to go back and make us whole, I'm not opposed to that. But, you know, that water is under the bridge to a certain extent.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, this the ruling really applied to the statute, and which had to do with conventional ethanol. But when you look at the overall volumes for the RFS, that's including all the different pools that we talked about: the conventional piece, the advanced biofuel piece, and also the biomass-based diesel portion, which is biodiesel. So we're going to have to kind of evaluate this and move forward. But we're hopeful that moving forward, as Monty said, the key is moving forward, in that it is now clear that EPA has to follow the law. They can't use these other factors in determining how to set those volume targets. They can only look at domestic supply, and that domestic supply means production capabilities that we have for feedstocks and also production capabilities. So moving forward, that should bode well for this rule, so we can hopefully continue to move the RFS volumes for biodiesel and ethanol ahead and move it forward.
Any other questions?
Can I ask about something else?
Yes, you can.
Maybe you're aware there's a very hot special election race in southeast Iowa. One of the key issues on that is Chairman Jim Jewett. What are your thoughts about just this general overall topic of transgender rights? And apparently one of the issues down there is whether transgender students or other transgender people should be, whether special accommodations should be made for them, whether they should be made part of the Main Street. Have you got any thoughts about that in general?
Well, first of all, as we've said multiple times, we believe all individuals should be treated with respect, and that's where you start from. And I believe this is a local decision, and it was decided at the local level, and I think that that's where it should be decided. But I do think that we have an obligation to treat all people with dignity and respect. Well, first of all, Kay, 72,000 Iowans are counting on us to find a solution to make sure that they have access to insurance come January 1 of 2018. So I want to compliment Commissioner Oman as well as the carriers. My team have worked extensively with the White House, with not only the administration, but with Secretary Price and Administrator Seema Verma to put in place a stopgap proposal. We are on the phone weekly with them. I had the opportunity when I was out in D.C. again to talk to Senator Grassley and Senator Ernst so that we're all on the same page to make sure that it's moving forward. There is a hearing today, a public hearing, so that is progress that we are continuing to move towards. All parties want to get to yes, but I've said all along, this is a short-term fix. This is not a long-term fix. We still need Washington, D.C. to implement change. Obamacare is not affordable. It's not workable. It's not sustainable. We've seen our individual market collapse. We've seen our premiums go up 110% over the last 5 years. We have healthy Iowans and young Iowans moving out of the individual market. We've seen premiums go up and deductibles go up, and so people have a card, but they're not able to use it. And so we have to figure out doing nothing is not an option. And so we're going to continue to move forward so that we have a stopgap short-term proposal in place for 72,000 Iowans.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I talked to Senator Ernst, who's actually working on it, and Senator Grassley, so they're the ones that are out there negotiating on that behalf. But, you know, we're going to continue to look for whatever we can to move forward, and that's the message that Senator Ernst relayed to me. They're looking for solutions. They're trying to figure out a way to do something, because I think there's one thing that we should all agree on, and that is not doing anything is not an option. And so, you know, we need to continue to look for alternatives that can make it sustainable. I've advocated for, I am a proponent of block grants coming back into the state. I like the flexibility, the Empower Act that Senator Ernst and Senator Rubio have filed. That piece of legislation gives states the flexibility to combine programs, to combine some of the funding, to look for programs that work, to tie them together. I think that's the right direction to go in. So that's something they're continuing to talk about. I think they should continue to take a look at that. Now, that means, you know, they have to adequately fund it. So that doesn't mean shifting the cost to the states. So I'm not advocating, you know, it has to be balanced. But I think you'll see a lot of governors across the state of Iowa that would be in favor of taking, like they did for welfare reform back in the 80s, that really gave states the flexibility to put in place programs to meet the needs of Iowans, and then we can look at it holistically. And so I continue to talk to them about that as an option. There's just a lot of variables. No, I'm hung up on doing nothing is not an option. That's where I'm at. So if we can figure out a way to make this work, to reduce premiums, to market driven, then that's the direction that we need to go. I as I indicated, would like to look at block grants. So I really would like them to take a look at, you know, giving states more flexibility in the programs. But doing nothing is not an option. Well, Japan is a significant market for beef. They have been. We've seen our numbers increase over there. I have a lot of confidence in Secretary Tillerson and his ability to do free and fair trade. That's important. Trade is so important to Iowa. 1 in 5 jobs are attributed to our ability to export our goods and commodities around the world. That's why I thought this was such a timely trade mission. With agricultural commodity prices where they are, they're under input cost. We're looking for every opportunity that we can to grow, not only maintain our existing footprint, but to look for opportunities to grow that market. So beef is a great example. That came out of the 100-day plan that was put together by President Xi and President Trump. They're continuing that dialogue with the Comprehensive Economic Dialogue that they just held in Washington, D.C. Two of the governmental officials that we met with that had participated in that Comprehensive Economic Dialogue, as well as Ambassador Branstad. So we're continuing to look for opportunities to move that forward, to implement and grow markets for our commodity group, so we can hopefully see that play out in Iowa's economy as we look forward to build that. So those are conversations that will continue to be had. We're going to continue to look for opportunities to grow and expand, but we have seen market expansion in Japan when it comes to our beef, especially Iowa. Iowa Premium, I think, has seen significant increase, which is an Iowa processor, in their beef opportunities in Japan. We hope to do that same thing in China.
Yesterday, Ron Corbett talked about that you should think about a special session. Obviously, you're going to have to address 17, but to address this current fiscal year as well. And it looks like Treasurer Fitzgerald has also expressed some concerns about we need to borrow of some sort to get us through this current year. Do you look at the numbers that way?
Well, first of all, I want to just reassure all Iowans that our bills are being paid and have been paid and are being paid going forward. Education, Medicaid, $40 million into education. So we are paying the bills and we'll continue to pay the bills. And we're continuing to collect the facts. We're doing the due diligence that we need to be doing so that we can make a decision, an informed decision on the procedures moving forward. So, but I want to just ensure Iowans, you know, we have almost $500 million in cash reserves. I don't think this is a time that we need to be short-term borrowing. I don't think it's necessary. And we're going to continue to gather the facts and do the due diligence, and we'll be making that decision moving forward.
But you don't think it would be necessary to go in there and cut this current year?
We are continuing to look at that every day, Dave, and so we're going to make those decisions moving forward. Well, first of all, I want to just say thank you to the state workers for the tremendous job that they do every single day on behalf of Iowans. They're on the front lines doing the job. We recognize that, and we're proud of our team that we have in place. It's been a tough fiscal year. I mean, revenues are down, and that's a fact, and every agency has a role to play as we look to address the reduction in revenues. And so the legislature did a lot of things last year. Chapter 20 reform actually gives our state agencies more flexibility in making decisions to better manage the revenues that they have. And so we are in constant communication. My staff is. We have policy people that are talking to our directors. My chief of staff is communicating. We communicate with leadership. We all have to address this issue. And so we are monitoring it every single day. And in the meantime, what I'm doing, and I just did it, we're looking for opportunities to grow this economy. Whirlpool, I don't know if you saw the news today, is adding 500 jobs. The June jobs report, we had 11,200 new jobs added. That's the most in two decades. So as I meet with business and industry every single day, they're growing, and it's significant growth. Again, it's workforce that is really the barrier for them to expand at a rate that I think they can. If we can help Iowans get the skills, that increases their income and their viability. That that impacts what they're purchasing. That helps the economy. So that's what I'm focused on every single day, is looking for ways that we can get Iowans the skills to fill the jobs that are available right now. These are great jobs. These are great careers. Looking for opportunities to grow our economy, especially with agriculture. That's the backbone of our economy. So we want to continue to provide new markets and new access. And that's what we are focused on every single day. Well, so first of all, sexual harassment in the workplace is unacceptable. We have a zero tolerance policy. Our employees sign off on that. I understand that Senator Dix has also instituted a zero policy, tolerance policy, that the Senate is conducting an investigation into full scope of what came out at the trial. So I'm appreciative in the steps that they are taking, and I have faith in Senator Dix that he will take the necessary steps, and has, it's my understanding, taken the necessary steps to make sure that that's not going to be tolerated in the workplace. Well, I think that will be decided, right? That's part of what's been coming forward. I don't know if they've looked into it. No, but I don't, I'm not sure what they're doing. I think it would be probably healthy to have, what we do is we have the HR at DAS. Whenever we would have an incident, we have an outside person come in and actually do the investigation, ask the questions, and report back. And so I think it's always appropriate, or it's not a bad idea to have an outside individual like that review the situation and then give a report back. Well,
he's the person handling the investigation.
But is he the outside?
No, yes. They haven't appointed an outside person. They've asked Charlie Smithson.
Well, I'm not sure yet. So I don't know that, Kay. I'm not aware of that piece of it. So I think it would be helpful to contact DAS. They have the expertise and the resource, and get some feedback from Director Phipps, I guess, is what I think would be an appropriate thing to do. Well, that's accounted for in the budget, so we'll have to, you know, if that's... Well, Jake, is there, or Colin, is there a... This is unique, but it would come out of the general fund. Well, but, you know, if it's an obligation, then it's an obligation. And so we'll have to do what we have to do to make sure that we meet that.
All right, we have time for one more question.
Well, I am proud of what we're doing. As I indicated, you know, this has been a tough fiscal year. We have met our obligations. We've reduced our expenditures, and I'm focused on doing the job and looking for opportunities where we can grow the economy, help Iowans get the skills that they need to fill the jobs of today and the job tomorrow. So I'm out there working every single day on behalf of Iowans to grow this economy and hopefully help them find the skills in the meantime. Thank you.